Everyone, and welcome to minute 56 of season 7 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me, one of my favorite guests, is Alan Sanders of the, surprisingly, The Alan Sanders Show. He also did some minute-by-minute podcasts a few years ago. But he's had enough of that. He just likes guesting. So welcome back to the show, Alan.
Rob, it is such a good time to be back with you because it's in one of my all-time favorite trilogies. We've hit other movies, but it has been a pleasure to be here for now all three, as of today, all three of the Die Hard flicks.
Yes, yes. I'm very glad that you're a part of it also. You've been on all seven seasons. You know, you're one of the few people.
Yes.
You're one of the few people who's been on every single season. There are some others, you know, but you are one of the ones who keeps wanting to come back. I don't know. I guess I'm doing something right.
My wife is being a glutton for punishment. So,
okay, that works too. That works.
No, I absolutely love this. You did mention we used to do one, me and my buddy Walt. And his life took a couple of turns, one really bad, one really good. And we may not do any more, but I was very pleased to do the seasons we did. And to be able to now have you continuing this tradition of looking at a movie a minute at a time allows me still that little moment of joy of being able to do something I love, which is looking at the movies and having fun talking about those things we learn 1 minute at a time.
Yeah. And there always is what to learn. There, you know, even though there are a lot of naysayers out there who don't believe and think that we just waste our time, you know, as you and I have discussed.
No, those are people who are very short-sighted.
Be careful. Be careful who's listening to that.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. Yes, but we know that there always is what to talk about, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And even in this minute, we're going to find what to talk about. So, minute 56 begins with Carl tossing a pass to Simon and ends with a guard asking if things are starting to move along in this movie. You know, we're getting close to the 1 hour mark. By the end of this week, we will be there. We saw that Simon and his men are starting to do some nefarious things inside of the Federal Reserve building. And basically at this point, this is where everything turns for the guy in the Federal Reserve building, Felix Little. You know, so, you know, he's in for a big surprise. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you love when I shock you and just you know, completely throw you off balance by asking questions. But do you know anyone by the name of Felix, or can you think of like famous people named Felix?
There's only two Felixes I know off the top of my head: Felix the Cat, which was a cartoon that I used to watch when I was a kid, and Felix Leitner, who was part of the James Bond series.
Okay. There are others that you know, but you're just not thinking of them right now. So first of all, do you know what the name Felix means?
No, actually I don't. I always associate it with a cat because of the cartoon.
Okay, well, it actually is, it means either lucky or successful.
Lucky, okay.
Which fits in, I guess, with Felix the Cat, for sure. And also, the female versions of it are Felicity, which again, fits in with what you just said.
I had no idea that there was a female version of Felix. I would have never put two and two together on that one.
Well, now, you see, even you can learn new things here.
Oh, I learned an awful lot from you.
Well, I learned this also because these aren't things that I know offhand. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, during my research. You know, did you know that there were five popes by the name of Felix?
I did not. I didn't know that there were five popes by the name Felix. Which is sad, given that I'm Catholic, but okay.
Okay, you see, I wouldn't know that. Anyway, I mean, the last one died in 1449, so I mean, it has been a while, but still, you know, there have been five popes by that name. So I asked you if you know of any other famous fictional characters named Felix. So you have Felix the Cat, as you mentioned. Okay, there is a villain in DC Comics named Felix Faust. Okay, there is a one Deep Nine in Star Trek. There is a character named Felix, who's the programmer of the holodeck. Okay, again, these are things that I wouldn't have known beforehand, but
Oh, is
which others are
it
there?
Odd Couple? Isn't it Felix and Oscar for the Odd Couple?
That is
It just
correct.
popped into my
We're going to
head.
get there. That's right. Okay, so as you said, you have Felix Leiter, as you mentioned earlier. Then you actually also have Felix Unger, who from the stage play, movie adaptation, and television series of The Odd Couple. So I knew that you knew another one. And that's one of my all-time favorite Neil Simon quotes from that. Where he's talking about the
Oh,
cornflakes,
yeah, he goes, "You leave little notes
where
on my pillow. We're all out of cornflakes. F you." It took me 3 weeks to figure out F you stood for Felix Unger.
that's right. Exactly.
Love that line. I actually had the pleasure of playing Felix Unger once in a production of the Neil Simon's The Odd Couple. So had a lot of
Wow.
fun in that play.
Okay. Are you as anal retentive as he is?
No, which is ironic that I would play him. I'm more Oscar. But the guy that was playing Oscar was a much bigger, more gregarious, kind of a slovenly looking person just to the eye. And I was a more slender person in comparison. So I just kind of got typecast.
Okay, makes sense. Makes sense. And the final one is from Wreck-It Ralph. You have Fix-It Felix.
Okay, I've seen Wreck-It Ralph, but I didn't remember the name.
Okay, it's the character that constantly is fixing everything that
That
Ralph
breaks.
wrecks. Yeah, exactly. So you have that one also. So yeah, I thought I would just start off with that. So basically what Carl does here is he tosses something at Simon, and as Simon grabs it, we see that it's a gun, which it's very strange the way that they did that. I guess it's because that Simon wanted to be able to walk through the metal detector without it going off, even though seconds later they were gonna take out all the guards there. Which it's I mean, we talked a little bit about this on Friday, but it's hard to tell. Some of the guards they kill and some of them they like put to sleep. Or whatever, it's very inconsistent from that perspective. Like we don't know if Simon and his men, if their main goal is to kill people or just to, just to inoculate them and put them to sleep, that type of thing. It's like I said, it's inconsistent the way that they do that because, he catches the gun, and then he turns to Felix and goes, "Oh, I think we'll go straight to the withdrawal." And whatever, it's a line that's just thrown in there. It's fun, but it's a typical action movie line. I can imagine, like Schwarzenegger saying
Right.
it.
No, it's typical for the genre. Can I also say that I love the fact that since this is an homage to Hans Gruber from the first one, I love seeing him sort of dressed to the nines here, because obviously the point of having our first terrorist in the first Die Hard movie was this well-dressed, erudite, well-educated, not your typical villain at the time when we'd see 80s action movies. And to have a little bit of a throwback to that here for him to be all dressed up and looking like he's a Dapper Dan rather than a burglar.
Right, but I mean the reason he's doing it is because it's part of the facade of him coming
Of
to make a
course.
transaction. I mean Hans was dressed that way because that's probably how he
Right.
always dresses. Simon is actually
Correct.
just dressing up here,
That's what I said. I like it because it's a bit of an
from that
homage. I didn't
perspective.
say that he's the same. I like it because this
Right.
reminds me of, oh, okay, there is a lineage here to Hans Gruber.
I mean, again, I don't know enough about suits to say is this a high profile type suit like Hans was wearing or something like that. For me, a suit is a suit.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that they talked about in the original Die Hard, that what do you call it, a John Phillips, I think he said the type of suit. So is this a John Phillips, which we found out at the time was a fake brand name, so maybe this is
Well,
also a John
somebody
Phillips
didn't want to
suit. Who
pay for
knows?
the product placement, so they had to make something up.
Exactly. Exactly. And then the shot changes and we see that Carl is using this Star Trek type inoculator on Felix, basically putting him to sleep. Or actually, you can even say it's like the one in Back to the Future, Part 2, you know, where he needed to put Marty Jr. to sleep in order to, you know, have Marty switch places with him, stuff like that. But I didn't look into the technology as to whether we really do have things like this where you can, you know, I mean, again, this is almost 30 years ago where they had where they're showing a device where you can sort of inoculate someone and put them out that way. Do you think that do you think that's real?
We had when we were in the Navy, because, you know, to get mass inoculation, they used air injectors versus having needles. So that way they could very quickly, without having to worry about a needle, without an air in the line. And what it really is it's basically using high compressed air to literally push whatever it is into the body rather than a needle. And that's exactly what this is here. It's a handheld version where that way you wouldn't have to worry about lining up a needle or hitting something correctly. You can just put it anywhere and hit the trigger and it will inject whatever you want.
And what do you think that they're injecting? They're just some sort of, you know, sleeping pill or something like that. I don't know.
Obviously some drug that will knock you out. I have no idea what, but I mean, ironically, a soon to be daughter-in-law in the family, she is an anesthetist in a hospital. And she's like, the stuff we have today, now I'm sure there was strong once upon a time, but she said, you'll never even be able to count backwards from 10. If you get to 3 or 4, you're lucky. When we give you when we hit you with the stuff to knock you out for surgery, you're out in like 3 to 4 seconds.
Oh, wow. Yeah. From what I remember, it's been a while since I had surgery, but yeah, it works that way. You know, they say start counting back to 10 and then you just don't remember. I remember one time I had surgery. This was probably about 15, 17 years ago, something like that, where, you know, they said start counting back to 10. And then next thing I know, I woke up and I said to the doctor, I said, did anything go wrong? How come I'm not asleep? And he says, what do you mean? What are you done? You've been sleeping for 2 hours. I was like, okay.
The other thing I will tell you, which is kind of a sideline, because of what she does, we've learned that they've gotten so much better at the kinds of drugs and the amounts that you no longer have that drugged all day feeling like, you know, 20 years, 30 years ago, which is kind of wild. You do wake up feeling, quote, refreshed.
Okay, that's good. That works. That works. And I love the way that Simon basically puts Felix to sleep. He like pushes on his glasses as he's like falling back and someone catches him. You know, that type of thing. It's a nice look the way that they do it here. You know,
we mentioned this before, and some of the things I always pay attention to as an actor. It's actor business. It gives him something to do instead of just watching the other actor sort of just fall by himself. You're doing this little bit of business and it is. It's a nice little moment. It was like, okay. And it's almost like I'm making you go to sleep now.
Right. Exactly. And then Simon and his men start walking towards the elevator. And at this point, they start playing the music here, which is great. I've always loved the song When Johnny Goes Marching, When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again. And they just play it so well into this movie.
Mm-hmm. What I love about it, and I'm so glad we're going to talk a little bit about the score. Scores have always been something that I adore. I have been a collector of movie scores since Star Wars came out as a double album in 1978, following the movie's release in 77. Actually, it may have been late 77. I remember we bought it for my dad for Christmas, and I ended up listening to it as much, if not more, than he did.
You have to remind people, we're talking about records here.
Right. Well, when we say score, I mean the orchestration to a movie, not the music. Correct. If you have songs.
Right.
What I love about when they incorporate here, When Johnny Comes Marching Home, it's a familiar tune, but they orchestrate it in a way that it feels like it's part of the score. And then at moments, you almost hear the Die Hard score come in, and then it's repurposed again back to Johnny Comes Marching Home. So it becomes fully integrated with the overall feel of this scene.
I really like the way that the score here was done again by Michael Kamen, who's done all three of these movies up until now. And, you know, it's just great the way that he's able to integrate, because In every one of these three movies, he's taken some other type of score, repurposed it to into the Die Hard thing to make it part of Die Hard, and then to continue by using it throughout. So, and we get parts of Johnny Comes Marching Home again, and things like that. And it's just done really well because it feels unique to the Die Hard music, that type of thing.
Well, the other thing that's wild about it is, you know, the tune When Johnny Comes Marching Home, originally composed during the American Civil War, it was used by both the Union and the South, but neither side thought of it as, well, it's only a Confederate theme, right, or it's only a Union. Both sides used it, but it has, because it's a bit of a march, it's a heroic sounding piece of music.
Yes.
Usually you would think you'd associate it with the good guys, but we're seeing it here in the sense of it's triumphant. He's pulled this off. So it's kind of wild to kind of back these up. You've got a heroic song, but we shouldn't be thinking of the bad guy as the hero. But what has happened is this theme is telling us he's pulled this off. He's fooled everybody. And so it's heroic to him. In his view, he's getting away with this.
Right.
And so could almost hear, like any good bad guys don't think of themselves necessarily as bad, but he's getting away with what's going to be one of the biggest gold heists ever. And I love it because it's jarring in the sense that it is a heroic piece you associate with good guys, and yet it's being played here to almost for the moment in this movie celebrate his triumph over the police. And it's a wild disconnect, because you know it doesn't go together necessarily, but somehow it works perfectly here.
Correct. Now, I mean, it's something we've discussed many times with numerous of my guests, you know, over the last 11 weeks. But do you know that in overseas, you know, outside of America, the theme is actually on a different song? It's not When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again.
I didn't know that. What is it?
It's known as the Noah's Ark song. You know, the animals come marching through two by two or something like that.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had my British guests, they all have never heard of when Johnny Comes Marching Home Again, because to them, it's the Noah's Ark song.
Which is funny, because now that you say that, I remember as a kid, we had the marching ants song, where you would sing the ants go marching one by one. Hurrah.
There you go.
Go then two by two and then three by three. And I remember as in elementary school, our music teacher teaching us basics of notes and building on top of the same kind of repetition, we used When the Ants Go Marching rather than When Johnny Comes Marching Home.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, the song itself, Johnny Comes Marching Home Again, was very popular during World War One and even in World War Two. You know, that was, I don't know if you've ever seen, have you seen Star Wars 17?
No, I've not seen this. I saw Hogan's Heroes.
Okay. Well, Hogan's Heroes probably doesn't have the song When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again there, but Stalag 17 does.
I think the other thing about When Johnny Comes Marching Home is it's a hopeful song, too. It's about your hope that you'll see when Johnny comes marching home, the idea that you'll be able to survive the war and come back home.
Be triumphant. Exactly.
Yeah, triumphant. Which, again, goes with the jarringness of you've got the bad guy who's triumphant right now.
And that's correct.
I got to tell you, now I know we get to the gold shot at the end of this scene, but I remember the very first time I saw Die Hard 3 in the theater, I couldn't figure out what he was really up to. I had no idea. I didn't even realize the bait and switch was coming my way. I still thought he was a terrorist who was having fun putting these little bombs in places, and that was his goal. I had no idea until this moment how it all was coming together.
Well, I mean, that's sort of the point, isn't it?
Yeah, which I love.
Want us to guess it. I mean, that's one of the great things about this movie is that, you know, in some ways it's a rehash of the original Die Hard, but it takes almost an hour till you realize, wait a second,
right?
You know, it's not something different. There is a connection here.
Well, but
that's the thing.
The whole idea, it's a robbery, it's a bank heist, it's a, you know. But what I loved is, you need that full hour of the cat and mouse game with the police to realize that the terrorist, or not the terrorist, but in this case, Simon is doing everything he can to put the city on such edge to be able to get all the cops out of here.
That's right.
You go, oh my God, that's brilliant. Why didn't other bad guys think of this, right?
That's right. You have to wait for Jonathan Hensley to think of it.
Right.
Right. So basically, Simon and his men walk into the elevator, and then Carl, who's the final guy to move in, he turns slightly, and we can see the patch on his arm, on his sleeve as he's walking in, mm-hmm. and you can see that on the sleeve it says Federal Reserve Bank of New York, U.S. Marshals, mm-hmm. which again shows us how prepared they really are for this whole thing. You know that these characters have all basically, you know, taken on personas, mm-hmm. Which we'll get to in the next few weeks as to some of the mistakes they make regarding that. But you know, the look they get right.
The other thing is, if you were thinking this was just a regular bank, again, seeing it for the first time in the theater, when you zoom in on that patch, that's the obvious tell. This is not your normal bank.
That's correct. Okay. Do you know how many Federal Reserve banks there are in the U.S.?
Oh, let me think about this. Because I know, like, you've got Atlanta, you've got New York. There's, or am I thinking mints? I'm going to say 10 to 12.
Okay. All right. So you got it because it's 12. There are
12. Okay.
There. There are 12.
I kind of figured the different districts or regions around the country.
Correct. Exactly. So there are 12 Federal Reserve Banks in the U.S. And this particular one is responsible for the second district of the Federal Reserve System, which encompasses the state of New York, the 12 northern counties of New Jersey, Fairfield County in Connecticut, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands. Okay. Mm. It is okay. Located on 33 Liberty Street, which is where everything is going on here, obviously. It is also the only Federal Reserve Bank that is on behalf of the Federal Open Market Committee. All right. And it's also the sole fiscal agent of the U.S. Department of the Treasury. Okay. And what's more important here, it is the custodian of the world's largest gold storage reserve. Okay. Which, again, makes a lot of sense. That's mm-hmm. what they're doing here. As the idea of that it holds all the gold. Okay. And the gold depository lies 80 feet below street level and 50 feet below sea level.
Hmm.
Okay. And already in 1927, the vault contained 10% of the world's official gold reserves. You know, again, we don't know at the time of this movie how much it's supposed to be holding and stuff like that. But, you know, it's known that this is the place where it holds onto it. And, you know, it makes me always wonder, you know, why are countries keeping their gold there as opposed to in their own countries?
Interesting.
You know, I don't know the answer to that. And I mean, according to what is known, it holds approximately 7,000 tons of gold bullion, which is a lot more than Fort Knox, which we will get to a little bit later in the week when we discuss that specific information about that. And 98% of the gold that is in that is being held here is from central bank. It belongs to central banks of foreign governments. So 98%, that's a very large amount. I mean, meaning that they don't really have that much U.S. gold here.
So, you know, gold goes by the ounce. Like, they sell it by the ounce.
Mm-hmm.
So a pound of gold, now, obviously, gold prices fluctuate. But a pound of gold, based on today's ounce rate, would be close to $25,000 for 1 pound. And you said there's 7,000 tons?
Yes.
That's a lot of gold.
Approximately. Approximately.
That's a lot of money.
Yes. Yes, it is. I mean, do you know how much a gold bar usually weighs?
Oh, no, I don't. I know they're heavy, but I have no idea how much a bar by itself weighs.
A standard gold bar weighs approximately 27 pounds.
27 pounds. So if it's $25,000 a pound, I don't have a calculator, but 25 1,000 times 27 is how much one gold bar is worth. I got to look.
Correct.
Up, bring my calculator up here. I got to do that on my phone here. I want to know how much that is. That is a ton of money. So 25,000 times 27, that's $675,000 a bar.
Wow.
I need to borrow gold.
And if it's well, you know where it's located on 33 Liberty Street. Good luck sending something up.
Help, buddy. I think would he miss one if one just was missing after everything here that is in that?
We'll get there this week. Also, there are things that are mentioned. But what I love the way that when they showed the patch that's on Carl's thing, they zoom in really quickly, you know, just to show us okay. In case you missed it, we're in the Federal Reserve Bank. That's where we are right now.
I love that shot because the camera's following them into the elevator, but it does. It does zoom right in, and so you can read it crystal clear.
And then the shot changes, and we're back in the basement with a lot of construction going on. There's heavy machinery around. We see that Katya is still hard at work. And then one of the machines down there just moves over and just plows right into the wall. You know, they do a nice job just in a few seconds showing us, first of all, how prepared these guys are, but also showing us that this isn't simple, but if you know what you're doing, you can theoretically, get into here with this whole thing.
Well, what I love is the not only the planning, but the fact that you know they've got this dig going on where you would have this kind of equipment. So it's not even odd that this kind of drilling equipment, this earth boring equipment would be readily available because there's this huge project going on, right? I mean, there's a construction dig. The city knows about it. Everyone knows about it. So if you just repurpose one of those vehicles, it's not like you had to import. Like, what are you doing with this digger in the middle of New York? You know, there's a project going on. It makes sense.
That's right.
It's like everything had to come together, all the planning, all the timing, and it all. Another reason I love this movie so much is because of that element that you, as the movie watcher, you become aware of just how much planning went into this heist.
Yes. But as much planning as went into it, I mean, the bomb went off in the wrong place. So you think that should have thrown them off a little bit, but it doesn't. You know, I guess it was close enough. that's the way it looks to me. You know, close enough. And then they show us, you know, the outside of the gate of one of these areas that's holding gold, and we see just says French Republic on it. But we'll get there later in the week. Also, we'll talk more about it. It's just interesting that for me, I went and started looking. Okay, is it the French Republic of something, or is what do you think it is? Do you think it's France or do you think it's a different country?
I have no idea. I never even thought about it, honestly. I mean, for some reason, I'm just looking at the bar shaking, and I didn't even bother reading the nameplate. So it's slowing this down 1 minute at a time. I even didn't pay attention to the fact that it says French Republic.
Right. Okay.
So I have no idea.
Okay. Well, we'll get there later in the week, just a way to keep people to come back to want to know whether we're dealing with something. There you go. And hopefully you'll still be here later this week if you behave yourself. And
I will do my best, sir.
Hey, I'm not just saying. I'm just talking about. I'm not saying behaving yourself with me.
true. I could find myself grounded somewhere else.
That's what I was referring to.
A fully grown adult, and I can still get grounded.
any married man like us knows that you can still get grounded.
Yes.
That's what it comes down to.
I'm not allowed to go out and play.
I'm not allowed to be on my computer.
You know it.
Yes. And we see one of the bars fall off. And then it's a great transition shot because then it shows us the monitor and you see the gold bar fall also. It like continues. It starts to like slide off in the shot of, the actual mound of bars, and then it quickly switches to the monitor, which obviously it's not in full color. It's not black and white either. It's a strange color that they have on this monitor. It's like a bluish screen type of thing. And you see that it actually, continues its fall, which is nicely done. I like the way that they do that there.
Yeah. It's a nice transition from, like you said, the filming of the bar falling to moving to the security cam, and you see the bar, and then a second one joins it as the security guy is like, whoa, that's
supposed to- Well, you see, that's the thing I like here. This is the second security guy that we've seen that is realizing that something's going on. We talked a little bit about it. I think it was 2 weeks ago that one of the guys was looking at the fact that the shoes of these businessmen are actually, army boots. Mm-hmm. And before he was able to do something about it, they'd already sprung their plan on and stuff like that. So here's another guy who sees something's going on. I wasn't able to find out what this actor's name is, because we have three actors or three characters that are just named Federal Reserve guards. So I'm not sure which of them this could be. But we see that this guy is actually on the ball, because he goes, "Hey, Captain, you want to come down here and take a look at this? Something's going on." He notices that maybe there's an earthquake going on or something else.
That's the other thing that I like about Die Hard 3, at least when it comes to the quote, the non-player characters in this overall shoot 'em up movie. They're not your typical asleep at their desk or that they're easily beguiled. They are paying attention. And even the fact that they're paying attention, it still shows planning that Simon takes that into consideration.
Correct. Yeah. Completely agree.
Which I think adds another layer of just when you're watching it, even if it's unconscious, you realize Simon and crew must be really, really good, because they're getting past not only, your typical police and everything else, but you don't have you don't have your stereotypical guards asleep at their desk. They're actually paying attention, and it still doesn't matter.
Correct. Because again, it's all planned so thoroughly and so well. Mm-hmm. So there's no question about that. And at this point, he looks again at the monitor as he's saying all this. And then I guess his boss, his captain, starts walking over towards him, and he passes these two repairmen that are there. Mm-hmm. Which basically shows that it says advanced systems alarms electronics. Okay, so they already know that they're. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about this tomorrow, but I love the idea that there are these repairmen that are there, that at this particular moment, that they somehow got here. We didn't see them show up. They showed up beforehand. Are they showing up because of the bomb that went off in the subway, or are they showing up for another reason? We don't know why they happened to be there at this exact time. Mm-hmm. But it's something that shows again how well planned this entire thing is.
Yeah.
So as the captain walks over towards this other officer, he goes, "What do you think, guys? You'll be able to fix that?" And he's going to have to wait until tomorrow, just like everyone else, to hear what the actual response is going to be. But again, I like the way that they do this. They, it's very clever.
Everything about, again, I'll just go to say my first response when I saw it in the theater was, I found myself going, "No way, no way." It's just, I was completely overwhelmed watching this all go down and realize this whole movie turned into one of the most planned, well-planned heists.
That's right.
Rather than a terrorist going after, trying to bomb the city.
Yeah, exactly. So that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about for this minute?
No, the big note I had was to talk about when Johnny comes marching home, which we already covered. I'll just reiterate again. It works so well in this, because for the moment, the bad guy is winning, and you almost, this is really weird, but as a watcher, you're almost kind of happy to see him, that the planning is paying off for him.
Correct. Yeah. Because again, you want to see how things are moving along, where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. That's one of the fun things about watching a plot of a movie. You want to see where it takes you. You don't always want it to be thwarted right away. And if it is thwarted, so you know that there's something else that's gonna, you know, they're gonna move to plan B, whatever that is. You know, that type of thing. All right, so as I've talked about last week, and I will definitely talk about through the course of this week and next week, the script is a mess with these 3 weeks because the order of things changes a little bit, and also the way things are done is very different. I mean, you don't have Simon show up at the Federal Reserve on an appointment and things like that. You know, that's not in the script. He is actually down in the subway tunnel with Targo and Kat, and I'm trying to remember if Katya's even mentioned, with Targo at least for sure, and you know, the other men. So the only part of the script that's related to this particular minute is you know, it says Targo's drill winds within the drilling hole. Simon turns and nods to six men with silenced machine pistols who move into the drilling hole. Interior of a bank vault. Bars of gold bullion on pallets are stacked floor to ceiling. Suddenly the walls vibrate. The floor shakes until the whole room is rattling, and Targo's hydraulic drill explodes through the wall. Red lights flare. A siren sounds. In the monitoring room, the federal marshals stare, astonished and startled, at the visual monitors as the drill bit breaks through. Federal Marshal Number 1. Jesus Christ! Federal Marshal Number 1 stabs the emergency button. An alarm clangs. Federal Marshal 2 speaks into a microphone. Breach in the main vault. I repeat, we have a breach in the main vault. So, again, it's a little different. I like the way they do it in the movie much better, for obvious reasons. It's more of a surprise about how they're doing the whole thing. You know, that again, they're coming from both upstairs and downstairs at the same time. So I like that.
And I think this goes to the experience that John McTiernan as an action director brings. I think he has a better sense of how to visually tell this for the audience.
I agree. And it works. You know, it makes it seem very plausible from that perspective. You know, and I like how they do that. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called McTiernan Monday, where my guest will give their top five John McTiernan films. You only have 11 to choose from.
Right.
But, you know, there's still some good 11 movies on there.
Right.
So, Alan, why don't you tell us your top five and start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay. Well, just for the audience's benefit, Medicine Man's not going to make the top five, but I still enjoyed I did enjoy it. Ironically, number five is this very movie that we are breaking down 1 minute at a time. I think of my top favorite John McTiernan directed flicks. Die Hard with a Vengeance from 1995 is my number five. Okay. Number four, a movie I didn't get the first time I saw it in the theater. It took me rewatching it three or four times to realize, oh, it's a satire poking fun at the entire action movie genre. It has become one of my favorite movies, Last Action Hero. That's my number four.
One of your favorite movies, and it's only number four. It's number four. Yeah, that's
one
pretty,
of my favorite movies, period. But as far as in the John McTiernan world, it's number four. But I don't know how you feel about Last Action Hero, or if you remember, I remember the first time going, this is just a mess. It's all over the place. It doesn't really make sense. Then I went back and rewatched it with maybe fresher eyes, maybe not with an expectation that it's not supposed to be Die Hard. It's not supposed to be, you know, Terminator. It's mocking the action genre. And then I like, oh, that's why this movie's so good. It really is. It was so hard, I think, ahead of its time. And that's probably why it bombed at the theater.
Okay, I mean, you'll have to wait until the final episode to find out what my thoughts are. So,
oh yeah, you don't ever tell. That's all right.
That's right. And I know people are keeping track, so I have to keep my mouth shut also, you know, not to give away any hints.
My number three, which I still think, even though I love Harrison Ford as an actor, and I did like the other movies, but as far as techno thrillers, I think The Hunt for Red October is, again, it's one of the best techno thriller movies out there. It's got ultimate rewatchability. We do like the other two movies with Harrison Ford, Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger, but there's just something about The Hunt for Red October, start, middle, finish. It's a great story. It's well-paced. It keeps you still guessing until the end about what the Captain Ramius is up to. I love everything about it.
Okay.
Number two. A movie that blew me away in the movie theaters. Another Arnold Schwarzenegger. How can you not go with a sci-fi killer, you know, I don't know, slasher movie that redefined not only the genre, but gave us an iconic character that everyone knows.
Wait, the iconic character is Dutch or the Predator?
The Predator.
It could be.
Number one. My number one favorite John McTiernan movie is the greatest Christmas movie of all time, Die Hard.
All right. Why am I not surprised that that's high on your list?
Well, you know what? And I sent you a message before we started. I know there's other Die Hard movies, and it's not like the other ones are terrible, but to me, Die Hard's a trilogy. It should have been left as a trilogy. 1, 2, and 3 are three great, in some ways, while there's some similarities, they're still pretty unique stories. Mm-hmm. I think Die Hard 3 is better than 2, but I like watching all three of them.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, it's the same thing as like Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones, to me, is a trilogy. You know, there's...
Correct.
So, all right, that's fair.
Yeah.
All right, great. So, Alan, would you like to tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Sure. If you're into the whole news talk kind of genre, I do a daily talk show called The Alan Sanders Show, where I look at the news of the day and I try to present it in an informative, engaging, and hopefully entertaining way. So you can check that out. Just look for The Alan Sanders Show wherever you find me on most of the socials by looking for that. And I really just enjoy, I don't look at the news a minute at a time, but I do certainly look at it one day at a time.
Sometimes it feels that way.
Yeah.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah. Hurrah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.